This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Kimberly.
And this is Katie.
And you're listening to A Date with Dateline. Tonight's episode is called Under the Desert Sky. It is a repeat. It first aired January 4th, 2013. It is season 21, episode 14. And because I am very, very busy with another business I have, that makes sound like I'm a prostitute.
It doesn't. I thought it made you sound professional.
Really? Oh, I have many endeavors. I have many professional endeavors.
My first thing is like, oh, maybe she's a realtor.
Okay.
That's what.
Okay. Yes. I have many side projects, including getting my realty license. No, I'm not.
No. It's a really hard test.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, gosh. I'd have to study. No, I'm not into that.
A lot of studying.
Because.
Like memorizing.
Oh.
So
because of that, Katie has been gracious enough to take over the recapping for this week. So I'm basically doing nothing. I'm just going to sit here, like lay back, just chillax, and just interject quips, probably, about someone's hair. But this is my best day ever. I didn't have to do anything. She did Twitter. She did the recaps. She did everything.
Also, if you don't like the idea of me doing the recap, now is your advance warning. To turn off
this
episode. Because this could go horribly wrong. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
You're going to do great.
Yep. This is going to be a very special episode.
We're doing like a Freaky Friday thing. Like where we take over each other's jobs and then we come back with this awareness and appreciation of what the other person does.
It is. It's like when Kimberly edits for the first time, it's going to be...
It's
going to be a whole new world.
Yeah, okay. That's true.
So we open Under the Desert Sky, not to be confused with Under the Prairie Sky.
Which one was that?
It was one of the first episodes we covered, and I believe it was the one where they were in Montana driving from one end of the state to the other. It was the couple.
Who was murdered?
Was the girl with the really messy car, and the car was discovered, and it was filled with Mountain Dew.
Oh, gosh.
Stuff.
We've had so many messy cars, but I keep thinking of the guy who had toilet paper in his back seat. Do you remember him?
Yes,
that was
a different
guy, and he had like a roll that was rolled out,
and nothing else in the car. It was sort of a clean car, but then a weird random roll of toilet paper. Okay,
that's a good idea.
So, Under the Desert Sky, we open with Wendover Will. Also, did we mention that this is narrated by Keith Morrison? I don't know if we talked about.
Oh no,
that
I
yet.
Didn't mention. Sorry, Keith.
Yeah, which is extremely important because there are some shots of him in this episode, some wide sweeping desert shots that are very, very romantic.
Romantic
and dramatic.
Romance novel cover.
Really?
He's in his leather jacket, kind of sitting/leaning on a fence, and the backdrop is a desert mountainscape. And the book would be called Sensuality in the Sand or something. I don't know.
It's good. It's a $1 million idea.
Okay. Good.
So Wendover Will is a giant neon cowboy that sits atop West Wendover, Nevada. Now, I don't know why they have a giant neon cowboy because the town itself has about 4,000 people in it. So that's
a little confusing. Yeah, I was very confused because isn't there a dude kind of like that in Reno?
There's a dude like that in Vegas.
Yeah, so I thought we were in Reno for quite a while because I wasn't really paying
attention. And we're very, very far from Reno.
Yeah.
So Wendover, I looked on a map, is a few miles from the border of Utah. So we do get some good Mormon stuff in this episode, but that's why. Because it's a hop, skip, and a jump. So our heroine slash victim in the story is Mickey Costanzo. Mickey Costanzo is a 16-year-old high schooler. She is on a million sports teams. She's a great student. She's well-liked. She's really popular. She's really pretty, by all accounts.
Yeah, she's very
cute.
Would
you say? But she is also... Sorry, and they switch back and forth between Michaela and Mickey the whole episode.
Yeah.
Whether they're being very serious or lighthearted. So, regardless. It's March, it's 2011, and Mickey is walking home from school after sports practice. I think she's on the basketball team. And the only reason that she's walking home on this particular day, she lives about a mile away from the high school. Normally, her sister Christina picks her up from school, but this day, Christina is in Las Vegas with her husband at NASCAR.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bad timing. So Christina is away. Mickey's mom is at work, and Mickey's other sister, DJ, is visiting a college or is at college. I couldn't really tell, but she's not there either. So normally she gets a ride. Today she's walking home. Now, Mickey's mom says that Mickey is reliable to a fault. She is the kind of person that will text you when school's letting out, hey, I'm going to practice. And then mm-hmm. she would text, hey, I'm going to walk home now. Practice is over. Hey, I'm mm-hmm. home now. So Mickey's mom gets nervous when she's at work and not getting these check-in texts from Mickey. So the mom goes home and only the daughter DJ is there. And the mom flips out and is like, something's horribly wrong. Mickey's missing. DJ also freaks out, which, okay, this is definitely
It was then. A fast freak out, too.
We get the idea, though. If Mickey is all the time one way yeah. and then is just radio silent, yeah, you freak out.
Yeah.
It breaks the pattern. So they are calling and calling and calling and calling, and the phone rings through once and then goes straight to voicemail every other time. They call Christina, who's at NASCAR, and Christina's the other sister and has not heard anything either. But Christina's not as worried as the mom and DJ. Christina thinks maybe she's actually out being a real teenager for once, pretty much. Hopefully she's having fun. Before they even contact the police, DJ is contacting all the friends. They have about almost 100 people out searching for Michaela before the police are even,
contacted. I love a search party.
Yeah, you do. But they didn't go into any details about
I didn't get quadrants. I didn't get big maps. I didn't get cases of Gatorade.
I'm sorry about that. You got nothing. Okay, so the police get involved. They start looking at the most likely person to have seen her last, which is the boyfriend. And we get a very...
Oh my God. Is he 12? He's the cutest little boy I've ever seen.
We basically get to see him for about 30 seconds, which at the beginning of the episode, you don't know that, but I'm just going to lay that out there right now. We see Javier, who is the boyfriend who looks like he's maybe 11. Yeah.
But adorable. Like he should be on a Disney show. Didn't you find him cute?
I put that he was a dorky acne teenager.
I'm going to go back because maybe I'm totally wrong.
But they bring Javier into the station and Javier obviously has nothing to do with it, has not seen her, doesn't know where she is.
He was so genuine in his like responses to the police, though. He was not like a normal teenager that would be like, yeah, whatever. He was like he goes, she's not the kind of girl. If things were bothering her, she would tell me. She would talk about it. We talked about things, you know, if something was bothering her. I thought that was really cute.
Did you think it was really cute that he didn't seem worried that she had been missing and that there's a search party of almost 100 people? And I'm sorry, but almost 100 people in a town of 4,000
is a lot of people. Yeah, that's true.
And they keep doing adorable.
What are you talking? He looks like one of those, like he should be on Bug Juice on Disney, which was my favorite. Do you remember Bug Juice where they were all at camp?
Bug Juice.
He looks totally like one of those boys. He looks way too young for her. It's kind of creepy.
He did. That's what I put.
Because he does look like a boy.
She's a 16-year-old, so she's, you know, wearing makeup and trying to be cute and adult, which is what you do when you're 16. He looks like he's still in junior high.
Oh, for sure.
But anyways, so Javier hasn't seen her. He obviously has nothing to do with whatever has happened to her.
Because he weighs like 80 pounds.
Right, because he's
and is 9 years old, approximately.
So they decide to start looking at her phone because that's going to give them a better idea of who she was talking to after her practice and after school. And there is one phone number that keeps coming up, and that's only up until 5 p.m., and then everything stops from her end. And all of those calls are to Cody Patton. Dun, dun, dun. Cody is one of Michaela's oldest friends. But at this point in the episode, the mom in her interview with Keith does discuss that Mickey wasn't allowed to date. And my question was, does Javier know that?
No, she wasn't allowed to date until she was 16. That's why she had never dated Cody.
Oh, I see. Because Cody and her had kind
always been friends, but never dated because she wasn't allowed to date.
Friends in quotes.
We don't know. We can maybe guess.
I can guess.
Think there maybe was like puppy love.
I think so. Cody's called into the station and he tells the police that he saw her around 5:30 p.m. And he saw her out front of the school leaving with someone that he assumed was her boyfriend. Now, at this point, we find out that Cody is engaged and he's living with his fiance's parents. It's sort of because that's all the information we're given. 19.
Yeah.
Because he's 19.
And she's still in high school, the fiance.
Correct. Yeah. And here's when we get a beautiful shot that is widening out of Keith in a leather jacket against a night desert backdrop.
So beautiful. Painting.
It is. I mean, there are some, and they also keep doing aerial shots of the town the whole time, which is bizarre because you see these massive buildings, which you can only assume are casinos. And then everything else is just, I don't know how to describe it, sort of dingy.
It was run down. It is not a wealthy town. No. And I felt like that those aerial shots could have been, the money that was used to do those aerial shots could have been better used to maybe do some renovations in the town.
To help the town. Yeah. I know, that's true.
Let's take away these three aerial shots and we're going to kick that money towards the high school or something.
The high school can get new uniforms. Yeah. Right. So the sister Christina is, it's been a day now. It's the next day. Christina understands that, all right, there's no way that Mickey would stay out all night. She's coming back from NASCAR early, tells her husband, get in the car. We're going back to look for Mickey. Now, Christina is a crying sister. I'm going to put that out there.
She didn't bother me.
I think she's a good crying sister. Yes. I think both of the sisters are excellent. DJ and Christina, we get a lot of camera time with them. They're genuine.
They didn't bug me at all.
Great. I'm very happy to hear it. You see that I'm nervously looking at you.
Right.
All right. So Christina drives back from Vegas, no more NASCAR, and she tells her mom, I am going to find her and I'm going to bring her home. She drives around all night that night, and this is the first time we hear about the gravel pits, which I can only assume are somewhere in this sort of desolate wasteland, these giant mounds of gravel. So Saturday morning, now we are not quite 48 hours, but a few days out, one of the searchers in the mass search for Mickey sees fresh tire tracks in this sort of remote part of the desert near the gravel pits.
Which I'm always happy when a search party actually finds something.
Didn't you think Christina was going to find her? They sort of set it up when Christina says, yeah. I'm going to find her. She didn't.
They kind of made it like there was something there. She just didn't know it was there. She instinctively was kind of near the area.
Drawn to these gravel pits. But then also, I was nervous when they said the searcher sees fresh tire tracks. I said, well, there's Christina driving through. I thought maybe it was Christina's car. I got a little nervous. But the searcher is smart, looks around, and sees some blood in some sagebrush nearby these tire tracks and immediately calls the detectives. The detectives come in and start to dig and find part of a body. Now, the town, keep in mind, is very, very small. So they don't have exactly a task force or a forensic team to come out and dig up this body. So they have to call in forensics from Reno, which is the opposite end of the state. It's 400 miles away. To come. So they just have to set up basically a crime scene perimeter and leave her there. They unearth poor Michaela after the Reno forensic team gets in, and they don't get any DNA or forensic evidence anyways.
No.
So appears that she has been beaten pretty badly. She's been cut in the face a lot, which is unfortunate. Ugh. Her neck was cut. She was stabbed. And it's basically a really aggressive murder. There's a zip tie that's attached to her wrist. So this is important because there's no other forensic evidence. And also, how is there there's nothing on the zip tie? No DNA on the zip tie whatsoever? I don't get that, but that's fine. You would have to touch the zip tie and pull it.
Yeah, unless they were wearing gloves. I don't get how there's no DNA, but
yeah, I don't either. So the detectives assume that she has been actually kidnapped and taken from school and then murdered. now they start looking at the video surveillance camera footage from the actual school, which I found surprising because, I mean, it's a small town. There's one high school and they've got video cameras. So maybe every school now just has video cameras. I don't think my school had video cameras.
No, mine didn't.
So when they start looking at the surveillance footage, they see that Cody Patton was shown on these cameras and he's near what they call the southwest doors. It's basically the back door entrance to the school. Now, Cody, in his police interview, had said that he had seen Mickey leave through the front door with a guy who he didn't know who he was, who he assumed was her boyfriend. But the video is showing something different. It's clearly showing Mickey near the back doors of the school, and then you don't see her anymore. And it's also showing Cody in the same area. Now, we have a tiny interview with the mom who says that Cody has a tough temper. So this is our first sort of glimpse that Cody has some struggles. He's struggling at school and he's having
some home demons troubles.
Yes. And he has had to move in with his fiance, Tony Fredo. And
who is a girl.
Tony with an I.
Oh, and was it her... Tony with an I?
Yes, Tony with an I.
Okay.
And her parents, Cassie and Claude.
We'll get to them.
Yeah. And it's the only reason Cassie and Claude? I think couldn't... Claude. Could not look more like a Cassie and Claude if they tried. So, obviously, they need to call Cody back into the station. And Cody says something at this point that he had been calling and texting Mickey so much that day because he needed her to help him move some car parts.
Okay, that makes zero sense. She was like a tiny little girl.
She was a tiny girl. And also, Cody, we should probably mention, I saw two varying things on this. Dateline says he's 6'6". I saw another thing that said he was 6'8".
He's a strapping young man.
He is a giant ginger?
Yeah, he was a little gingery.
He looks gingery, yeah.
He's definitely my type, but he should have really asked a dude friend to help him or a larger lady friend. I don't want to discriminate, but maybe not...
To help
Mickey.
Him move some car help parts, which car parts. When you say car parts, I feel like it's like big things, like a door. I don't know. So it's just it's really
a
bizarre.
Door. Hold this door for me, Mickey. She would fall over if you handed her a door.
So that for makes some no reason, sense. Even though he's living with Cassie and Claude Fredo, he goes to this police interview, the second police interview with his father, Kip. Sorry, I don't know.
Kip I like Patton. Kip.
The name Kip Patton just sounds like something. Sounds like maybe he's a secret superhero, but he's definitely
He's a
not.
Winner. I could see that.
Because he didn't get interviewed?
No, I liked him. We'll get to it.
Because he was smoking cigarettes? Okay. Anyways.
The dad?
Yeah.
Was he smoking cigarettes?
Weren't there pictures of him smoking cigarettes?
I don't know. These details.
Basically, Cody's in the police interview, and the police are not getting what they want from Cody. Cody is denying everything. Cody says, can we stop for a second? I really need to talk to my dad. The police allow Kip to go in and talk to Cody, and we don't know what exactly happened. For some reason, this is the only police station ever without surveillance cameras in the interview room or video. But the detective says you can hear Kip, the father, just start wailing.
That's why I like Kip.
Oh, really? Because obviously Cody had told him something really bad. And the police come back in and Kip says to Cody, you got to start fixing this now as
That's
much
why
as
I
you
like
can.
Kip.
Mm-hmm. Really? What you did was heinous, which is not good. So now we're going to get Cody's story as he's been convinced by his dad that he needs to confess. So Cody says he picked up Mickey at the school and Mickey started... I don't know why he picked her up. Maybe it was under the ruse of giving her a ride home. We don't know. Mickey gets in the car and starts insisting that Cody needs to break it off with his fiance because he needs to start dating her. So they get in sort of a big argument, and I guess they're, according to him, just driving around. They stop.
And she's like begging him to date her.
Yes.
Even though he's engaged and she's happily with a boyfriend.
Right.
Okay.
So they're driving around and he stops the car. They get out, apparently by these gravel pits, and she starts hitting him. And she's hitting him, and he pushes her. She falls back, hits her head, which is, I feel like, a story we hear constantly. So
it happened on Degrassi.
It did? And someone died?
It did happen on Degrassi. She was in a coma. The base of the skull is very susceptible to injury.
But you'd really have to lose your balance to fall back, hit your head, and not brace yourself with your hands.
Oh, that's interesting.
Unless you've been pushed. And he did say he pushed her, so he must have pushed her hard if
that's
this is
true.
The real story.
I'm kind of picturing them falling like a fainting, like maybe. Stiff like a board, and then falls back.
You would brace yourself.
Yeah.
So after she's fallen, she starts to shake and seize, I guess. She starts seizing up, and he... This is his story. He decided to grab a shovel from the inside of his car and hit her on the head to try to knock her out. So I don't know if that's like you're putting the deer out of its misery that you hit, or...
He said it was just to knock her out so that she would stop shaking. You have to think that's going to kill the person.
Right. Of course. Because then... The next thing that he decides to do is he says he cut her throat to stifle the sound.
Yeah, he kind of says he flipped out at that point. That he admits was not a rational decision.
Right.
Like so any of it was rational.
He puts her in a shallow grave that he dug, and then I have in parentheses, well, when did he dig that? Just when?
Well, after, and then, in this course, version of the story...
In this version.
With the shovel that he happened to have in his car.
Okay.
That's what
he never goes into
is.
The digging of the grave. He
right.
just
so
says.
So I would assume it would be after. Because in this story, it's not premeditated. So
this
he wouldn't
story,
have had a
This is also,
grave.
Yeah, story number one. We yeah. should, yeah. And so then he takes off his clothes and burns them in a gravel pit nearby.
He does? So he was naked?
No, I think he took off his jacket. I'm assuming he took off maybe his sweatshirt. They never go into what clothes were burned, but the burning
of
the
clothes...
I kind
of feel like he'd stripped down to his boxers and then screamed to the heavens, because just ripping his clothes off, because he was in such a shock at what he did.
I don't think so. I don't think...
No.
I don't know.
I'm just saying in that story, that's what would fit.
So I guess the most important part of his story is that he did this all by himself. He got in an argument with Mickey. It was all alone. So he's cuffed, charged with murder, done. Enter John Olson, who is the defense attorney that is going to be defending Cody. So, by the way, during this entire confession, Cody has decided not to get a lawyer, which, again, okay, sure.
So maybe the dad is not a winner, because I love the dad because he got the son to confess and said, do the right thing. But I did ask my parents what they would have me do, and they said, get a lawyer first and then confess.
Immediately. Anyways, John Olson, defense attorney extraordinaire, whose specialty is keeping people off death row. So this is obviously...
Because he admits Cody did it. He never tries to say Cody didn't do it.
No, and this is clearly, if there was ever a death penalty case, it's a teenage girl. This is, in the words of Kip, it's a heinous crime. In the words of Kip, it's not great.
Wise Kip.
So Mickey's family, on the other hand, is now completely shocked that it's Cody. Christina has this conversation with her husband, who says, that's not Cody. Somebody made him do this. And the family is kind of in agreement on that. They're not pushing for the death penalty because they think something else is behind it. And clearly someone else is. Mm-hmm. So enter Tony Fredo. Now we get to see and meet the lovely Tony, who is...
Wait, I'm sorry.
The interesting Tony.
Tony?
Tony is described as deadpan... by John Olson, the defense attorney.
I think she always talks like that. I think like she'd come up to you and go, oh my gosh, the most amazing thing just happened. I got accepted to the college of my dreams. My life is so happy. And I'd be like, are you smiling, Tony?
Yeah, which is
yes,
fine.
I'm grinning. How can't you tell?
But then you pair that with Tony's black dead eyes and... She does. She has those eyes that
she
are
has, like no pupils. It's
she has
all
the
one
eyes,
color.
Like the Evan Peters eyes. That's what I call them. Yeah, where they have that thing. Our friend has them too, where it's just they're so dark they don't have pupils.
Yeah.
So Tony's parents go out of town. I don't know how this happens, but Kip, again, your favorite, enters mm-hmm. the picture and convinces Tony that she needs to go and tell the defense attorneys the real story of what happened the night Mickey died.
See, Kip is a hero. He's riding on his white horse all over town, gathering up the guilty parties and just going, come on, guys, we're going into the police station. He has a way with them. They just go, okay, Kip, I'll come with you.
Okay, so you have a much higher opinion of Kip, because my first response is, they very clearly in the episode state that Tony goes to talk to the defense attorney in her pajamas with Cody's father. What the heck is Kip doing at Tony's house with no parents home and Tony's in her pajamas?
Well, I think she maybe went there or called him and was very upset because one of the girls in the Skylar Niece case, I think, confessed in her pajamas.
Do you think that
you're just so distraught?
Does Tony seem like a distraught kind of person to you?
No, that's true. No, that's true. So again, you think he went and wrangled her and forced her to go in without even getting dressed?
Why Kip is hanging out with Tony in her pajamas? I feel like it's inappropriate for a grown man to be hanging out with this 16-year-old girl.
I know, but I think he probably went there, knocked on the door, and said, my son's in prison. I know you know something. You need to come with me. Now, a logical parent would say, I have to wait till your parents come back into town. But we don't know what Tony's capable of in the meantime. So he's like, your parents are not taking care of their child. I'm going to take care of you for them, you know?
Okay.
Tony's parents go out of town. Well, there's like a murder thing going on. So I would not trust them to turn in their daughter. So I would do it for them.
We should also probably note, I don't think I mentioned that Tony's parents are very Mormon.
Yes, they are.
This is a very Mormon family. They're both wearing, in their interview, Cassie and Claude both have these pins on.
Oh,
she's got
they?
A necklace and he's got a pin on his tie that I don't know what they are, but I'm assuming it has something to do with the Latter-day Saints. All right, so now we get the second version of the story from Tony. And she, by the way, is not smart enough to understand that telling this story to the defense attorney is not the same thing as confessing to a crime to law enforcement. But
so
we'll get to that.
So Kip did not take her to the police station.
No,
he took her to the lawyer's office.
Kip takes her to the lawyer's office because Kip's entire shtick is trying to get the death penalty off the table for Cody.
Right, right.
So he needs anything that he can get. So
right.
What Tony says happened is that she gets a text from Cody that says, I have her. Cody comes, picks up Tony, and she sees that Mickey's in the car. The three of them are driving around for a while and end up at the gravel pits. Cody and Mickey get out of the car, start screaming at each other. Tony looks away and for basically a second and hears a thud. And she doesn't know if it's against the car, against something. She hears a thud. And that's when Mickey is on the ground. At this point, Cody starts digging a grave. They both move her to the grave and then start kicking and punching her.
Yes.
And then they both cut her throat.
Together. Yes, they both
together.
Cut her throat.
Yep. So I don't exactly know when. Okay. Yeah. They said they placed her body in the grave, took turns splitting her throat. So I don't know when she got hit with the shovel.
When the thud happened.
Two of them. Oh, okay. They think that was the shovel? Sorry.
I think that was
the only reason I'm trying to figure it out is because that becomes a little important later. Because the story, again, is going to change when we get to court. But the most important thing is they basically murdered her together. They both cut her throat. They took turns slitting her throat, which is the most horrific thing I've ever heard. Obviously, this is going to get turned over to the police. The defense attorney immediately turns it over, and Tony
because he has no client attorney privilege with Tony,
right? But
because
Tony
and Cody are not married.
Right?
If they were married, would that have been binding?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure. But Tony's parents are obviously devastated. They say no one could have seen this coming. They think that someone coerced her into doing this. Also, this is the point. We learned several important facts about Tony. Number one is that she doesn't really have any friends.
I'm not surprised.
She has very few friends outside of her family and Cody. When someone says you have very few friends, it means you don't have any friends. She has Cody.
Because
if you do
have friends, they say a handful of good friends.
And they would have been on Dateline.
Yes. Good point.
So also, Toni was a beauty pageant queen. Something that they say, because she was in West Wendover Junior Miss. Now, that technically is not correct.
It's not?
Because I don't know if she was in multiple beauty pageants or if that was the one she was in, because I was in Junior Miss. I was in that pageant. It's a pageant for high schoolers.
Do you have pictures?
Yeah. I sang Chim Chimini. That's my talent, dressed as a chimney sweep.
Oh my gosh.
In a British accent.
Adorable.
And then they brought the lights down halfway through my talent because they thought it was the end of the song. And I said into the mic, I'm not finished. And then they brought it back up. And you could hear my dad in the auditorium. And he was howling. And he goes, that's my Kate. Yeah. It was a good moment. I did not win. I did not place. I did nothing. And we had to do a fitness dance number. Fitness style dance number.
Like Drop Dead Gorgeous?
Yeah. It was really bad. My mom made me do it because you win like scholarship money. I wasn't going to win. I did want to do it. I laughed a lot. I got in trouble. I was not a good participant. But anyways, just saying.
So happy right
if
now.
If that's the only pageant so that she was in. But they do show a picture of her in her beauty pageant attire and sash, which we'll get to. Because it makes me think that she was in more than one beauty
pageant. I think she was.
And also, I'm going to tell you all about the title that she's showing in the sash, because about it from Toddlers and Tiaras. I know what it means. So, okay, I've got good information on that. Anyways, moving on. We find out that she has no friends and that she did beauty pageants.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
And then the parents start with the defense of their lovely daughter who couldn't possibly have done this on her own. Cody was abusive. Cody was very, very possessive.
They pull out the abusive.
Right. But they have a little bit of backup because there is some sort of school video surveillance of Cody and Toni fighting in the hall, and then Cody grabbing Toni around the neck and screaming at her. I did not see that in the video. I'm assuming they didn't
show it. It looked grabby. It was definitely manhandling.
Okay.
He was at least grabbing her arm, and he kind of yanks her away. It didn't look great for Cody.
Yeah. It doesn't also look great that that the parents are like, well, he was abusive, but he could live with us. That's fine.
Live at our house. Well, the only thing I could think of with that was it was the same as Nicole and Azin on 90 Day Fiancé, where she wanted to bring May to Morocco. And do you know what I'm talking about? And then the parents were like, we either pay for him to come here or she's going to go live in Morocco.
That's exactly what it was. In all the interviews that I read outside, they were more worried that she was so enamored with him that she was going to move out.
Like elope and run away and they'd never see her again.
Right.
So they were like, at least we'll have him under our roof where we can keep an eye on him. And then
also, it's odd because Claude had said that he was like a son to him. So I don't know how someone would be like a son to you and also abusing your daughter, but that's cool. We'll get to it. So
he said that?
Yes, he did. He says it. So she didn't report any of this abuse because he wouldn't be able to get into the Marines. And that was his goal in life, was to be a Marine. And if he had this on his record, he wouldn't be able to get him in. It sort of suggested that maybe she wanted him to get into the Marines so bad to get him away from her. But, I don't know about that.
I sort of thought it was like she was trying to fix him so badly.
I think it was
more that.
She thought
the Marines could fix him, too, and make him a stand-up guy.
I definitely think it was much more along those lines. So the parents go on to claim that Tony's a victim. She was afraid for her life. That's why she helped him in this murder. She was basically Cody's other victim. She was afraid that she was going to be next. And the defense attorney says, baloney. I was really excited about that. So then we get into 2012. The plea deals start coming for Cody and Tony. Cody says that he would plead guilty to murder with no death penalty and a possibility of parole if he testifies against Tony. That's his plea deal. So he takes the deal, but then changes his mind and decides not to take the deal, and he wants to take his chances in court.
He's loyal to Tony to a fault. He was willing to go down with this whole ship without incriminating her.
Yeah, which is...
Her?
Her?
For her, you're willing to do that?
Is she funny? Then Tony gets offered a deal, and her deal is great. It's second-degree murder with a chance of parole after 18 years. So, I mean, she'll get out in her late 30s, basically.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But she has to testify against Cody. She agrees immediately. She says, yep, I will flip on him.
She flips on him.
No problem.
So fast.
Now we have Tony going in to her sentencing hearing, and she basically has to relay her story once again, but this time it's a whole new story. So we have story number three. So story number three is that Cody was upset with Mickey. He just couldn't stand the sound of her voice. He picks her up. The text still happens, which is, I have her. Goes and picks up Tony. They drive around. But this time, Mickey is kind of stuck in the back seat with her hands up by her face, which I'm guessing is sort of referring to the fact that she was zip-tied. So Cody had done this. So in this story, Tony is terrified. They are driving towards the gravel pits, and somehow Cody manages to text Tony, we have to kill her.
Right, because he doesn't want to say it in front of Mickey, because then Mickey will freak out.
And Mickey's already zip-tied, though. So I guess they're texting and driving, which is unsafe.
Very dangerous.
And Tony mouths, why? And Cody, I don't know, has murder in his eyes. Whatever nonsense she comes up with. Cody pulls over and starts digging a hole. So now the hole is dug before anything happens. Right. Takes Mickey from the car.
In this version, Cody's very organized.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I can't kill her until I have my hole, Tony. You know you have to have the hole first.
And
you know the order. Hole, then murder.
He pulls Mickey out of the car, tells Tony that she needs to hit Mickey. Tony insists
we don't know why he would want this, again, even smaller girl than Mickey. Tony is very small.
Right.
But he wants her to hit Mickey.
With the shovel, I think. And I'm assuming.
Shot.
Right. I'm assuming they mean the shovel at this point.
Yes.
So Tony says that she was terrified. So she backed off because Cody kept hitting Mickey. And so then at some point, Mickey's on the ground. Cody pushes her to the hole and gets on top of her. And Tony is holding her legs down. And it is at this point that Cody cuts her neck. Just Cody, not the marriage cutting. Cody's
the wedding
that.
Cake cutting.
And then at some point during all of this, the timeline's really screwy. I guess Mickey looks up at Cody and says, am I still here? Am I still alive? And at this point, Tony goes and sits in the car. And she doesn't know what happened after that.
Because Tony's back. Yeah, because Tony's back was to her.
Right. And I also don't understand how she's talking if her throat's already been...
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
The story timeline does not make any sense. But regardless, she sits in the car while Cody finishes the job and buries this poor girl. Then they drive off and get drinks at McDonald's.
Oh my gosh. Because so she was cool. Terrified. And after you're terrified,
you need a cold drink.
A shamrock shake.
They cross into Utah and they burn their clothes in the desert. Again, burning clothes. So, but it's a totally new story. And right before commercial break, Keith teases us that Tony had left something behind.
Ooh.
And then we go to Happy Honda Days. So then we come back.
A lot of Happy Honda Days. Yes. Every commercial break.
And then finally we get a shot of Keith and Wendover Will, the giant neon light-up cowboy, together. At which point I've decided that Keith should be Wendover Will every year for Halloween.
100%.
Every year.
Because he could do a lean that's sort of like a tilt, like an animatronic.
Like you're waving.
Cowboy waving tilt, you know?
Right,
like
exactly.
You're in It's a Small World. And Keith would just be like, leaning, upright, leaning, upright.
I'm really happy about it. Yeah, yeah. I think I'm going to suggest
it.
He
looked like
to
Woody
him.
From Toy Story.
So we come back from commercial, and Keith is telling us that Tony's story doesn't make a lot of sense, obviously, because we had already been told that she was writing him love letters when Cody was in jail and basically whispering sweet nothings to him in their jailhouse conversations when she'd come visit him.
In Tony's defense, and that's the last time you'll hear me say that phrase, sometimes abuse victims are very lovey-dovey with their abuser when things are good. You know, and they are still in love with their abuser. It's a complicated relationship. But
I'll give you that.
I still don't buy a word of her story.
Now enter Tony's diary. Now, for some reason, she's given the diary to Cody's parents. Kip has
Again,
the diary.
Because Kip has a magical words that are like one of those truth-telling, like he's whatever, I don't know what I'm thinking of.
Are you thinking of a soothsayer?
Yes, and anything they ask you, you just are hypnotized into telling the truth.
Like a tarot reader. Like a fortune teller.
No, it's like literally magic. When they're speaking, it's like they've given you truth serum. And you're hypnotized and you have to tell them the truth. Okay. I feel it's from something. I don't know what it's from. But
I think you have Veracimatu. What is it in Harry Potter? What's it called?
That would be the serum that was given that's
What's
the truth telling.
Veritaserum. Okay, so the diary. All of her insecurities are about Cody leaving her for someone else. And he doesn't really love me. He should really just be with Mickey. We might as well break up so they can get back together. So apparently Cody and Mickey were together at some point, as told by Tony's diary, when they were, who knows, in junior high, whatever. Then at one point she tries to overdose with 4 aspirins.
Oh my God, that killed
me. Yeah, it killed a lot of people.
4 aspirin.
Yeah, 4 aspirins.
Granted, she is one of those 85-pound girls, but still.
So Cody didn't really apparently have a reason to hurt Michaela. But Tony, according to this diary, was really paranoid about her. Thought she was going to steal Cody away. She was really, really jealous. And according to Mickey's sisters, Tony would scream at Cody and or Mickey if he was ever seen talking to Mickey. Cody and Mickey could not be together. And if Tony saw it, she'd freak out. And
also, she would just say snide comments when she'd walk by Mickey for zero reason.
She had a deep, deep-seated hatred for Mickey.
Yeah, irrational hatred.
It was pretty bad. And even if Cody was caught talking to one of the sisters of Mickey, he would get in trouble. The sister said that he would have
to
run away. He'd be like, no, I'm not allowed to talk to you. So Christina,
and we should say that Mickey hated drama.
Yes.
Mickey was a cool, fun girl, and she hated when people were mad at her. Mm-hmm. She didn't want to be in fights with anybody. She hated drama. So this was probably torture for her, having this guy that she's been friends with since she was a kid, and his girlfriend is psycho and screams at you whenever you talk to him.
Exactly.
Or screams at your sisters when they talk to him for no reason.
Right. It's becoming more apparent that Tony was the driving force in the relationship.
And the sisters, Mickey's sisters, say this is what makes sense to them.
Right.
They were baffled by it being just Cody. But when they hear about Tony's involvement, they're like, now I get it.
So after all of this has happened, it's time for Cody's second plea deal. which is he just pleads guilty to first-degree murder and the death penalty is off the table. So his defense attorney did a good job, but he never has to go to trial. So at his hearing, it's pretty sad. He apologizes to the family. He does seem sad, but...
He does. He was really close to Mickey.
He is crying, and he just says, sorry, sorry, sorry. Yeah, it's... But he is given
life. He has emotions coming out.
Oh, for sure. Of which she has zero. So...
Zero emotions.
He has given life without the possibility of parole, which the family's happy about. They do think that he should get life. I just don't think they were really pushing for the death penalty for him.
No, because so, I think he was like a second son to them. He grew up at their house, hanging around. They probably knew his parents. And they were like, we see the good in Cody.
Right.
Even though he did this horrible thing, we still think he's redeemable. And we see that he was at one point a good person and was steered wrong.
I still think they're a little easy on him. But he did kill. I mean, well, we don't know exactly. Okay, so...
We don't know, but...
So now the best part of the episode happens when we get an interview with Tony. Unfortunately, Cody declines a Dateline interview, but we get to go and see Tony in her prison garb with a Katniss braid in her hair. It's amazing.
No, it was like a side bun.
Yeah, with the Katniss braid.
Oh, you're right. On front, yeah.
Over the top. So, because she's a warrior.
Do you think her roommate did that for her?
I don't know.
Her roommate in prison?
No.
Her bunkmate?
Every time I see her, she's got a damn braid.
She looks a lot like one of Warren Jeff's wives.
Okay, so in our Dateline interview, Tony's mother watches through the glass as Keith interviews Tony on the other side. Now, the mom can't say anything.
Well, that's the only way they would agree to the interview.
Is the mom had to be there. Also,
and with an earpiece, right?
Right.
And doesn't Tony have an earpiece where the mom can say things to her?
No. No, the mom can't say anything to them, but she can listen to everything. That was
the
point.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Okay.
100% positive. They say that.
Okay.
So Tony says to Keith that she was definitely not jealous of Michaela. She said the entries from her diary were from a long time ago. And if you notice that nothing recently in the diary talks about her being upset with Michaela. Wah, wah. So now Keith tries to push a little bit and get her to talk about what actually happened the night of the murder. Now, the thing I found the most interesting about this is she says in answering Keith's questions that she hit her with a shovel. But in the courthouse statement, I don't remember her saying that she hit him with hit her with a shovel.
Well, the way you were doing the recap, you said Cody ordered her to hit her with the shovel,
and
then
she
you
didn't
jumped
do it.
To she wanted to get out, so she just like sat in the car. I think she was very unclear with her story, so I think maybe don't really know.
It's a little confusing.
So that's weird.
Yeah, it surprised me in the interview with Keith that she said she hit her with the shovel. And I was like, that's bizarre because she never really admits to that.
Uh-huh.
So, sorry. They're great in the Dateline interview because they say that she kept distancing herself from the violence of the crime. And every time she did it, she would look at her mom through the glass, which is really interesting. I found that fascinating. And she says the only reason she was even at the crime scene that day is that she was an abused woman and that she was afraid that he was going to kill her, too. And she doesn't know what Cody's reason was. She has no idea why. I mean, they keep going back to that throughout the whole episode, that nobody knows why he actually wanted to kill her.
Yeah.
She's really the only one with the motive, but that's fine. So in her Dateline interview, Tony says the sentence, well, when we finally got out to the designated area, and Keith doesn't let it go. Keith pushes her on it a little bit. He says, wait a minute, designated area. And she says, no, well, where we ended up. And that's not the same thing, obviously, as a designated area, because a designated area means that it's premeditated.
Now, my only thought on that, again, I guess I am defending Mickey in a bad way, is I think she might be dumb
defending
enough
Tony?
To not know.
Defending Tony.
Tony, sorry.
Yeah.
I think she might not be smart enough to know what designated means.
That's what I thought, too. You're not alone. I thought that, too. She's trying
to
use a big word.
Like a pretty dumb teenager.
Yeah,
exactly. On the other hand, it could have been a giant slip up that makes her whole story a lie.
But
easily the defense people could be like, she was just using a word. She did not know what it meant.
Oh, yeah. Then we get the final version of the murder. It seems like the reporters at Dateline found this because it's buried in the court files. There's details about the first plea that Cody took and then decided he wasn't going to take, the plea where he changed his mind. Cody had gone in to his hearing and started to give a sworn statement about the crime, and it went something like this. Basically, there was an incident at school where Tony sees Mickey in the hallway and calls her a slut. Cody tells Tony to knock it off, pulls Tony aside and says, why don't you guys just talk it out? Just hash this out.
No, and I think it was fight it out.
He says talk, and then Tony says fight. Cody says that that's why Mickey actually got in the car that day and they went to pick up Tony, because Mickey had agreed to hash this out with Tony once and for all because she's sick of her calling her a slut in the hallway. So they could have this confrontation. That's why they drove all the way out to these gravel pits, so they could do it away from prying eyes. Now, at this point, they get interrupted from the statement when stupid defense attorney comes in and says, no, no, he's not going to be taking the deal. So that's all we have, is this tiny version of the very beginning of the story. So I'm really annoyed. Are you annoyed?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, we would have to not say that this would be the true story, because this would be version number 5. Mm-hmm. But I still wanted to hear where it was going.
Me too.
Why did I say going?
So
I've been watching Florida Bama Shore, and I think their way of speaking is rubbing off on me.
It could be. It happens. So yeah. DJ, the sister, thinks that this was all planned out no matter what. She said she saw Tony's anger escalating towards Mickey for months. And Cody, I guess, kept playing sort of these nasty pranks on Mickey. He apparently cut her with a box cutter on the arm as a joke, which is a weird story. I don't really understand what happened. But
and the sister saw it happen.
And she said at that point, because Mickey didn't like drama, she decided to just cut Cody out of her life. And that made Cody kind of freak out.
By the way, is the correct decision. If someone cuts you with a box cutter, you do cut them out of your
life. You do. You say bye-bye. Right. And well, so then he would try to just make her mad in various instances just so she would react to him and talk to him.
Yeah, he was like a little boy, like pulling on her pigtails, trying to get her to talk to him because he missed her. I think he was in love with her.
Oh, I think he was too. And I think Tony knew it. And so apparently Cody had been trying for months, according to DJ, to get Mickey to come out with him and Tony. There were all these various reasons, excuses.
That's weird.
Yeah, that's weird.
Come out with the two of us who both seem to hate you.
And DJ said Mickey felt like that wasn't right, that something was really, really wrong. And the family says that she would never have gone with them willingly. She was too smart for that. So this one time that she wasn't getting a ride, she was all alone at school, DJ at college, Christina at NASCAR, they got her in the car.
Or they held a box cutter to her and forced her in the car.
Absolutely.
And it really was like against her will.
But I think that both of them, I don't think that Cody is telling the whole truth when he says that just Tony and Mickey were going to hash it out in the desert. I think there's a lot more to the story than that. And then we find out the other really, really important bit of information, which is Cody had been having an affair on Tony the whole time. And not with Mickey.
But not with Mickey.
With an older woman, who we don't know who it is, who actually loaned him the SUV that he picked up Mickey and Tony in the night of the murder. The murder car that drove the gravel pit.
She, I think, is pretty and has a good personality. I think she's whoever this mystery woman
the
is.
The older one.
She is a catch compared to Tony.
We get maybe 4 sentences about that, and then that's it. We're literally finding this out in the last maybe 4 minutes of the episode. This is the end.
Totally.
We find this out. That's all the information we get, but I feel like that's important. So we end the episode with the mom going to visit Michaela at her grave, which is in a private cemetery, sort of sitting up on this ranch on a hill, and she says Michaela's on the top of the world, which is really sweet. And of course, another obligatory aerial shot of the town with Wendover Will, and that is leads me straight into my OMG moment, which is Wendover Will is smoking a cigarette.
He has
a giant cigarette in his mouth. I found that hilarious.
Do you think that the town has not had the budget to go through and do their whole anti-smoking campaign changes to everything?
I have no idea, but I thought it was amazing. But that's it for this episode. Did you have a...
Well done, Katie. Everyone,
sorry. Did you have an OMG moment for this or a guacamole?
Well, first of all, I'm so glad you brought up Tony tried to overdose on 4 aspirins. I really wanted to talk about that.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about in the town, there is a brothel.
Not in that town.
Yeah.
No, in Elko. That's where the court is.
Oh, my God.
Brothels.
Okay, plural. So brothels, but the sign said a... quote unquote legal brothel. So legal is in quotes. So it's not legal.
So it's not, maybe legal.
If you ever want to laugh, you Google questionable quotation marks on signs because you see things like smart lipo by a real plastic surgeon. So it's not, he's just like a guy with a vacuum cleaner hose attachment that does your lipo. And then like, yeah, fresh meat, special chili today.
That's amazing.
And then obviously like the biggest part for me, I just really want to talk in detail about Tony being a beauty queen. That was the greatest thing in my life. And you said you had outside info?
Yeah.
About
her sash. It said state ambassador was the sash that she had on. Now, if this is like Toddlers and Tiaras and what I know from TNT, when you are given an ambassador title at a pageant, that's not a grand supreme or a mini supreme or one of the actual titles. A brand ambassador or a state ambassador title is given to the person who basically buys the most space in the program.
Oh my gosh.
That was
That's so good.
It was so a horrible.
So her parents basically bought her that sash.
It's a horrible episode of Toddlers and Tiaras that I remember where this poor little girl, I mean, all she wanted was a princess or a queen title, and she gets an ambassador title because they bought the most ad space in the program. That's what ambassador That's... meant in that episode, and okay. I'm wondering, when I saw ambassador title, I was like, oh, they bought it. They bought the title.
They totally did.
Thought that would make you really, really happy.
Oh, yeah. That's so good.
I know.
That's so good.
So what do you, but
I immediately thought of Anne Veal in Arrested Development, her being in a beauty pageant.
Yes. If you haven't seen Arrested Development by this point after last week's Meet the Hosts, I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
You're missing out. So, yes. And everyone on Twitter could not let the beauty pageant go. Dateline should have just not said it. They should have just not said
it. It's kind of mean. I feel like that was, again, the editors trying to have fun with us and be like, mean. We need to give them some humor. Let's point out over and over again that she was in a beauty pageant.
And then,
because even when they bring her out in prison garb, they go, the former beauty pageant contestant. They rubbed it in so many times.
And literally, they're showing pictures almost back to back of her and Michaela, and Michaela's a really pretty teenage girl.
Yes.
It's unfair.
Yes, that's true.
Unfair.
She's a murderer. Does she deserve fairness?
She totally doesn't, actually.
Yeah, Cody. Why are you being so nice?
Oh, by the way, for outside information, Cody only lived with the family for 6 weeks. It wasn't very long that he lived at the house before the murder. And if anybody gets a chance, please go and look up the Anderson Cooper video where he interviews Tony from prison and has... Anderson does. And has
my
the
boyfriend?
Entire Costanzo family talking to Tony while she's in prison and accusing her of fake crying and having no emotion. And they think, it's really
bad. I didn't even think she even tried to fake cry.
But she
I didn't even see her even attempt to fake
cry. She does in this video, and it's awful. Not a tear. Not a one. The sisters are calling her out. It's really
good. So again, devil's advocate, could she be just a terribly abused victim who has suppressed all her emotions? Or is she just seriously a sociopath? I mean, in comparison with Cody, whose voice is breaking, and I think he threw up in the interview room.
He was just really upset. Yeah.
He was devastated at what he did
and
how much he loved Mickey. And she cannot even fake a tear. She's so deadpan. And she almost seems annoyed that she's having to answer, we hit her with the shovel. Like, she doesn't even want to talk about it. I don't know what he was doing at that time. I had to go to the car. I don't know. He was slitting her throat. Whatever. It's not good.
It's not good. No, it is not. Not at all.
There were a couple quotes I wanted to talk about.
Oh, yeah. I got a quote.
a bad idea that became a horrible idea. A bad idea that went very, very bad.
Just come up with a new adjective. I was furious at that. I couldn't deal.
But I was like, for some reason, at this point I am in my mood, I was kind of like, I kind of feel like he's talking about my life.
No.
They also used the phrase sniff test, and it got me thinking, where did that phrase originate from? There was a cop that had to smell a piece of evidence. Or maybe, I don't know, like arsenic or something. I feel like it's a very old phrase.
Oh, yeah, that's and interesting. Then sniff out poison?
This, I don't know. I have no idea.
I like
it smells
that
like murder in here. I don't know what, but they were smelling some things that probably were gross.
Yeah.
Also, Keith pronounces the word pajamas because of course he does.
So what does he
Keith
say?
Keith is not going to say pajamas,
he says
which
pajamas.
Is how I say it.
Yeah.
He says pajamas, because of course.
Yes,
because good. He's a Harvard man.
He's a Harvard man. Stop it.
That's how, yeah, pajamas.
He's East Coast royalty.
Yes, he is.
Wait, and I had the last quote from the end, which was just, it's too good. It's Keith poetry at the best, and it makes very little sense. It is, and here on this little strip on the I-80, Wendover Wills still waves his grinning welcome. But he points to a place a little older now and sadder, as if the neon lights strung up among the desert casinos had picked up a layer of grief.
That's like two paragraphs. And there's some good alliteration
that's
in there with the W's.
That's one giant sentence. Oh, yeah. He nailed
that
it.
That's beautiful.
Good job,
like
Keith.
Like a layer, mm-hmm. Truly.
Somehow I picture Keith sitting out on his veranda with a black fountain pen, just sort of writing out these lines. Well, and then licking an envelope, sealing it, handing it to his assistant and say, tell them we'll be closing with this. And then looks,
they'll know what
and
to
then
do.
Looks off.
Looks off into the distance. And then he says to himself, well done, Keith. Another gem.
Exactly. Good. We nailed it.
He's so proud of it. And then he lights a pipe.
I know. Like, I was thinking a pipe, but then he turned into Gandalf in my scenario, and he can't be Gandalf. So he's much better than Gandalf. Although he is a little bit like a white wizard. If he wanted to be a white wizard for Halloween, I would be okay with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
He is our white wizard. We can call him that.
Although white wizard now has really bad connotations, because aren't the people that are really high up in the KKK called the Grand Wizard?
That's a Klan thing. Yes, they are. That's correct.
Okay, Keith, yeah, you're not that kind of a white wizard. You're a Lord of the Rings. You're a Tolkien white wizard.
Okay. I'm so glad we clarified that.
Yeah, let's clarify.
We are not sending a dog whistle out to Klan
members.
This
is not a whistle.
That Keith is one of them. Jeez. He is not.
Yes, he's not. I don't think any Klansmen are listening to our show.
I hope not. Turn it off right
now. Yeah, if you are, turn it off.
Did you have any precious moments?
No, I think there was supposed to be a precious moment with the dad, but everyone was just mad at him on Twitter because the dad the dad, Claude, Tony's dad.
Oh.
Because he said, I'll be dead by the time she gets out. Everyone on Twitter was saying, well, they don't get their daughter ever again.
Oh.
They were mad because he's only focused on that he doesn't get to see his daughter, and that the whole Costanzo family doesn't ever get to see Mickey again. So how do you feel about that, Dad? Yeah.
Right.
It's not good.
I thought there was a precious moment with this Mickey's sister and the whole leaving her outside thing. That's
that
one of the things I remember vividly from this episode,
because
I did remember this episode, and I remembered not wanting to leave Mickey in the grave out there at night, and the cop said, we're going to station people out here, she won't be alone. They're just talking about her body,
I know.
The daughter's like, but they're strangers, she shouldn't be out here with strangers, and then the mom was like, it made me feel really good to know that there were policemen watching over her. That night, you know? Like, it's just her body, and they didn't want her to be out there by herself.
I know.
Cold. It's very... That was sad.
It was touching.
The MVP of the week, who is yours?
Wendover Will? No.
Except he's giving himself lung cancer.
He is, totally. I can't pick him. I'm definitely saying Christina and DJ, the sisters of Mickey.
The sisters.
They were great. And the mom, but I really connected with the sisters. I like them.
I'm going to stick with Cody's dad and his saying he is the one who got everyone to confess and the police would know nothing if it wasn't for him.
Okay. He's still picking up a teenage girl in her pajamas. That's all I'm going to say. I'm just going to leave that. I know. Who's your loser?
Tony's mom.
Oh, yeah, she is. She's mine, too. You need to watch these interviews. She's so just out to lunch.
And then the scene where she's watching through the glass partition like a freaking mob boss or something, observing her daughter, giving her the nod of okay before her daughter can answer a single question. She's controlling the whole situation.
Your daughter murdered another a peer.
Yeah. Did you have any alternative theories? Because I do.
Do you? Okay, let's go. What do you have?
Cassie, Tony's mom.
Okay.
She is the kind of mom that would, you remember the Texas cheerleader case where the mom killed the Texas cheerleader so that her daughter could get on the squad?
What?
Yes, this happened, I believe, in the 90s.
And oh my God.
She killed a member of the cheerleading squad so that her daughter could make the team. Yeah.
You think this is a beauty pageant thing?
I think it's a mom knowing that her daughter is maybe...
Stop it.
Desperate for her to be popular and cool and get the boy. And she saw Mickey, who was very pretty and cute and popular and athletic and fun, as the enemy to that. Because the daughter was always like, he likes Mickey more than he likes me. Mickey's prettier than I am. He should just be with Mickey. And the mom was like, well, I'll take care of it. Mickey's your competition. I'll take care of it because you need to get what you want in this life. And you're not going to find a cuter guy than Cody. So let's do it. So she took care of it. Maybe they took care of it together. And Cody just tried to go along with. He was so brainwashed by that family. He was just lying to take the heat for it.
It's a believable theory.
Because she's that kind of mom.
Yeah, she you is. Saw, she defends her daughter her, like nothing. Yes. Yeah.
And you saw her through the glass partition, nodding, giving her approval. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She controls things in how she wants her daughter to be perceived and what she wants her daughter to say. And I think she would kill for her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm thinking. She had a part in it.
I buy it.
Really?
I'll buy it because we don't know what the real story is here. The whole thing is so irritating. I mean, yeah. I feel like... People on Twitter seem to get a little mad, too, because they bring up the zip tie, then completely forget about the zip tie the whole episode, which is a key thing, that this right. She was taken against her will, regardless of any of these stories.
Yeah.
There was a point when she was zip tied.
Yeah. The zip ties don't make sense in the story about the fight. They don't make sense in the story about we were just going to go for a ride and she was going to help me with car parts. They don't make sense in any version of the story, pretty much. The zip tie doesn't fit there.
Somebody premeditated it.
Yes.
Somebody premeditated because you had to buy a zip tie.
Yes.
You had to do that. And that's what people on Twitter were saying, was that there was a Walmart trip here.
Yes. And they got the shovel and the zip ties. Mm-hmm.
And there are some sick people in this world. It's upsetting. Yes. This is not a very holiday episode, Dateline.
No. I mean, there was Christmas, right? Well, they mentioned that they had their first Christmas
one time. I don't understand.
Mickey.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, there's the theme. First holiday without Mickey.
There's got to be more appropriate Dateline repeats for the holiday times. Come on, we don't have any Hanukkah episodes. Sheesh.
No, because Jews, we don't do that.
You don't kill
thing.
Your own.
Yeah, no.
It's true.
We like that's drama fair. That's like yelling drama, and then we just eat Kugel and get over it.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Do you have any alternative titles?
Yeah, I've got a few.
Okay.
Not really good
Are
ones.
Good?
I was busy this week doing my horrible recap.
My job?
Yeah. It was bad. I'll do mine first this time.
Okay.
All right. I have obviously Designated Area.
That oh, that's
would have
good.
Been
yeah.
a good title. I have Dead Eyes and Lies.
Ooh.
Would have been good. And then just my last one, which is important. Wendover, Will I Get Out of This Town? That's it. What you got? This is what happens.
But Mickey's family seemed like super happy in that town. Her mom worked at the casino.
I think everybody has to work at the casino.
They
That's
go
where
to
you
NASCAR
make the money.
On vacation.
Yeah, they're fine. They're like, fine.
They were happy.
It's
I don't want to look down on the town.
I don't, but they did keep have... showing these aerials, literally looking down.
And then we go to the town with the trial, and they show us the brothels.
They show us the brothels, and then this gorgeous courthouse, which is weird. Elko is 110 miles away. That's how small this town is. That they had to go 110 miles to the
Does
place.
Does that mean if you
courthouse.
Got a traffic ticket, you had to go 110 miles away to repeal the ticket?
They called it, it's Elko County, and they called it, a micropolitan. Instead of a metropolitan, a micropolitan.
Wow.
I thought that was amazing. So I guess it's all these little cities in Nevada.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's something about that small life. Everyone knows each other. I find it very appealing. I just don't like the desert because I hate sand and dust. So I really hate them. Like,
so
I don't
want like beach or desert. Do you like the mountains?
Like a lake. I like a lake. I like being near water, but not the sand.
So you do well in a wolf pack, but you would not do well. Okay. No, but they lived in the desert, kind of, and they drove to the lake.
It was a fake lake in the middle of the desert. Yeah.
Where did you and your brother drive? Again, every time I hear these desert episodes.
Utah.
Yeah, that was good.
In the mountains of Utah when we almost died.
Yeah.
We almost were murdered. I'll tell that story another time.
That should just be its own episode because you were almost a Dateline episode.
Yeah.
That should be its own Kimberly's journey into night. And that's it. It's perfect. All right. What are your titles?
The Pajama Game.
Cute. That's great.
It's a movie.
Yeah.
I think with Doris Day. Again, I think we've stolen this from a previous episode and a previous Twitterer. Tony. Whenever there's a Tony.
Yep.
I also always want to do the episode from Seinfeld where there's a Tony and George is always like, Tony, hey, Tony. And he just thinks he's so cool. I got a little song that got stuck in my head,
yay,
which was digging up them holes, dig it, digging up them holes, dig it. Do you remember that song from the movie Holes?
I've never
with
seen
Shia LaBeouf.
I've never seen Holes.
I just know the song because it was on all the previews. And they just have to dig holes in the desert. That's all I think they're prisoners or something.
Oh, Lord.
Like, maybe they're in, like, a youth camp and they're forced to just dig holes in the desert. And that's the song. Digging up a hole, dig. And then they go into a rap and Shia LaBeouf raps.
Oh, my God.
A whole verse. It's awesome.
I can dig it.
Tony and Cody and their no good, very bad idea.
That's great. That quote was insane.
Yeah. And then my last one is Under the Desert Lie.
Yeah, that was good.
I did it for you.
I like it. I almost wrote that. I thought of it and then forgot about it. It was good.
Twitter.
All right. Here's what we got. No one's allowed to make fun of me. Okay. So the Dateline NBC asked the question, do you think Cody knows more about who killed Mickey?
Yes.
And Brownie Boy.
If anyone wrote no, they're just an idiot.
I know. Brownie.
No, I think he's being totally truthful.
Brownie Boy 007 wrote, I think his lazy eye made him do it.
Did he have a lazy eye?
I totally didn't see it, so I wanted to know if you saw it. Did he have a lazy eye?
I didn't
eye?
See it.
Oh, I'm so
bummed.
I thought
he kind of was cute, but they did mostly show him from a profile with that mustache that was terrible.
At Tommy Sweeney 1 said, never trust anyone under 25 named Cody.
That's a great
and I felt like that was a great bit of advice.
Those Disney twins that had the boat show.
The Sweet Life of Zach and Cody.
There we go.
Yeah. But you know one of them's on Riverdale now.
Oh.
One of them is Jughead Jones. And I didn't even realize it was him. And then I was like, what?
I only have watched like the first 20 minutes of Riverdale. So I don't think I've gotten to him yet.
Oh, you're going to have fun. Riverdale is a fun binge. I was sad when I finished season one. I was like,
ooh, I'm excited.
Okay. Then we have, so then at Stick It To Me, BB, it said, it's the religious ones that always get me. And I'm also suspicious of freakishly tall men. Not sure why.
No.
But I totally agree.
What happened there?
I don't know. I'm suspicious. He was like 6'6", and I was like, no. That's what my first reaction was. So I hear you, Stick It To Me. I understand.
It is like I'm Jonah on Veep, and they just... Like,
yeah. Okay.
I like tall guys.
At Captain Southend, not trying to be cruel, because Lord knows I'm no great beauty, but did they say that Tony had been a beauty queen? Really?
I love
lots
the...
Lots and lots. I picked one, because...
The self-deprecating...
I know.
I'm not exactly.
Okay. Anyways, at FlowJoinTexas, every time I watch hashtag Dateline, I'm surprised by the number of cars that have shovels in the trunk. Thank you.
Yeah. Who has a shovel in their trunk?
No, they didn't. They totally planned it. At Danny Tanner, underscore 420.
Danny Tanner, like from Full House?
Yeah. Underscore 420. This person is fun, whoever they are. The nerve of Tony's dad to say, I might not be alive by the time she gets out. Yeah, well, Mickey, she doesn't get to see her family ever again. That's your daughter's fault. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's
true.
It's another thing. All right. At underscore Jessica underscore, chap lips equals deceit. And you can quote me on that.
Who had chap lips?
In parentheses, I'm watching hashtag Dateline and this bitch is hashtag guilty.
Tony. Was it Tony?
Tony had really
chap lips. Tony needed some Vaseline.
Yeah, you didn't see that either?
No,
I didn't see it.
She needs some Burt's Bees.
Alfredo rap.
Yay.
Dang, that city is like the saddest Coen Brothers movie ever.
Yes, it is.
At State of Amy. Quote, I was pissed that she wasn't cool with me randomly slashing her arm with a box cutter, end quote. Cody, probably. That's what she said.
Why is she overreacting? I was just doing it to get her attention.
So stupid.
We're just joking around.
And then at Los Torre, Tony's mom looks like she wants to talk to the manager at every restaurant she goes to. Yeah, Tony did it.
Yep.
Yeah, yes, Cassie looks like that.
She's complaining about the salad bar again.
And then the most important text.
Yes, they really are.
The most important text at Cindy Boxer.
Tweet. Tweet.
The most
not
important.
Text.
Oh my goodness.
You'll get
the
it.
Most important tweet at Cindy underscore
Boxer.
She's
new
Boxer.
At this, guys.
I got two new chickens today. My last two pairs are Laverne and Shirley and Lucy and Ethel. I name my newest girls Kimberly and Katie. I may have a problem. So that
Cindy
takes us into the news.
Wait, and didn't she do some special hashtags
she
there?
Did a special hashtag. Hashtag I'm not a stalker. Hashtag I love you guys. And we love you right back. It's the only tweet I've almost commented on. I was really excited about the chickens.
I think, Cindy, I wrote to you. I wasn't sure how to feel yet. I was still processing.
Cindy, I'm going to tell you straight up. I owned chickens when I was a kid. So I was over the moon. I felt the... It was the best Christmas present you could have given me. So I am stoked.
We are a classic comedy pairing like Laverne and Shirley. That is so overly generous.
It is so overly generous.
It's
still an honor.
It's the greatest honor. Greatest honor.
I am so excited. Okay.
Yes. Happy Hanukkah to me. Things in the news?
What do you have in the news? I'm ready.
Well, Rex, who's Rex the dog, the terrier.
The TV terrier. Yeah.
Everyone knows Rex. Pointed out that there are now blankets coming soon on the NBC Dateline store.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
They have, looks like fleece on one side, they're blue on the other side, and they say Dateline on them. They're not the Snuggies, they are blankets, and they are coming soon. But I feel like my petition is making real progress here.
I'm excited for
it
you.
It starts in the streets. And then it works its way up to Washington. And that's what's happening.
Starts in the street.
And then I wanted to give some updates on Whamageddon.
Yes.
So poor Linda. She says, I'm out. I opened an email from my boss while at a 4-H riding meeting with my granddaughter. As I cried out in despair, all of the horses spooked. Everyone laughed and no one took pity on me except for Kimberly. Because I was like, no, Linda, it got Linda. R.I.P. Linda, we'll miss you. It's so sad when someone goes, then Susan Morgan, this is so good, Whamageddon, I'm out waiting in a doctor's office in a paper gown. There was nowhere to run.
That is amazing.
But so I'm still in, I've been in, a, I was in the CVS.
Ooh.
And I had my headphones on, blasting it up. I was so scared, but then I had to turn it down to talk to the pharmacist. And they were playing some like D-list Christmas music of songs they've never heard. Like someone put a mixtape on of like, listen to these new artists' Christmas songs.
I've heard some bad ones this year.
Right?
There was
so
one.
So they
that
were
that
like
I,
going
like
anti-classic.
Yeah.
I was, thank God, it was so bad, but I was like, thank God, it's not Last Christmas.
That's
and great. So I've made it. I've made it into a couple stores, it really adds this huge anxiety factor level to your grocery life. Shopping. It's very fun. I'm super enjoying it. And the best tweet ever. I hope you're ready. Besides Cindy's, of course, about the chickens. Are you ready? Matt Whitlock, MP, said, "Your rap name is Young, plus something you always carry with you no matter where you go." Josh Mankiewicz tweeted, "Young photo of Keith."
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's great.
How, I mean, their bromance is so beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was. So thank you to everyone for writing to us.
Thank you so much.
Please keep writing to us.
Yes, we do.
Thank you.
We do like it. And we have a few special thank yous this week for people who have donated to our fund. What is our fund? We don't have a fund. People who have donated to us.
A Date with Dateline fund.
True. And also, please remember, you have 5 days. Well, no, kind of. You have 4 days. And we're going to announce our charity on the 22nd. So don't forget. But a very special thank you to Shannon, who wanted us to get some lunch.
I love lunch. I never treat myself to lunch because it seems like a wasted meal. And I think we should treat ourselves to lunch.
I think we're
going to
treat ourselves
lunch.
To lunch. Yeah, I think that was really sweet. Also,
and then maybe go to Walmart.
It forces Kimberly to spend time with me. So
yeah, that's true.
That makes me happy.
And also leave my house. Like, I have to put on clothes.
Right, so this is perfect.
And not pajamas.
And we will not be ordering in. We will be going out.
To a place where you have to interact with other people, like waiters.
Like a wait staff, yes. And then we would also like to give a very big thank you to Barbara.
Barbara, my parents' neighbor, who I should be paying her. Because she has to put up with my parents. And Huckleberry, the loudest dog ever that's lived, that was kicked out of doggy boot camp by the owner, who said he had never seen such an alpha dog in all of his years. He sent Huck home and said, "I can't. I'm sorry. I'm done." Like, I think he quit. I think he closed his practice. He couldn't after Huck. He was done. So, and poor Barbara has to live by Huck. Oh. This is a lot.
Thank you so much. I'm glad. We're really glad that you listen. It makes us feel
good.
Yes,
we love you,
thank
Barbara.
You, and
thank you
to everyone, even if you haven't donated. Thanks to everyone who listens. It's well, happy Hanukkah, everyone, and happy holidays.
Follow us on Twitter.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for the donations, the comments. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes for Christmas. If you do one thing this year for Christmas, give us the gift of a 5-star review on iTunes. And then we could get new and noteworthy, which leads other people to find our podcast.
Yeah,
so
tell
the stars. And the reviews are really, really important. And you can make a donation at paypal.me/adatewithdateline. And remember, don't watch alone. Watch with Tony's mom staring at you through a glass partition.
Perfect. Excellent.
Bye,
everybody.